Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
We'll have a special guest joining us in a minute, and we are ready for that special guest now. As we go to the WadeFord.com hotline, we've got an MLB Hall of Famer and lead analyst for the MLB on Fox, and of course, the former Braves legend, John Smoltz, joining us. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us on what will be the Braves' home opening series here against the Marlins. And I know things haven't started off the way that the team would have liked. Are you a must-win type of guy? Do you ever use that phrase? Because I don't know if this home opener needs to be a must-win for this team.
No, but I'm a first 10-day of the season. You got to check in, like positionally, pitcher, team. I mean, the start of the season is an overreaction in every way, right? And I felt as a player, I just wanted to build in cushion. And I wanted to build in, like, give me a really good start to build cushion. Get me off to a good start as a hitter. Because the season changes so quickly from spring training. It's such an oddity that we get used to. Like, you play all day games. You get up and nothing is the same. And then you get into the part of the season where it counts. And not that you ever assume anything, but when you don't get a hit for a while and you don't get a win, it just starts playing mind games. And that's where I think the Braves are right now. Yes, it's very important that they get a win and resume normal activity, because right now it becomes abnormal. Everybody is in shock, kind of like, how did we start 0-7?
John, I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. We talked a little bit earlier in the week about the way the Braves are constructed. And I think a lot of times in this, you know, DH era, where there's a DH in the National League, that, you know, we talk about swing trajectory, and you don't always play small ball. But I do have concerns about the way this team is constructed without Ronald Acuña Jr. in the lineup. They don't steal many bases. You know, we saw them start to bunt, I think, the middle of this week in that last game against L.A., but it's just a team that's always been known for kind of swinging for the fences. Do you think that the way that the Braves are constructed lends itself to some of these, you know, these long-term struggles?
Absolutely. And on the flip side, they don't have their identity yet. And their identity is Ronald Acuña. He makes everything better. He starts up the top of the lineup and creates a lag effect for the pitchers, especially when he gets on base. And they are built for home runs. They're built for, you know, putting up big amount of runs when the other pitcher is not on their game. But they have too much swing and miss in their lineup. There's no doubt about it. It is part of the game. It's what the game has evolved to, like it or not. It's just part of the game. It's not a disgrace in the eyes of people who are making decisions for you to swing and miss, because what they've figured out is that, or at least what their plan is, I'd rather have you swing the same way three times hoping that you won't run into a home run. And so it is part of what happens when you struggle and pitchers are on their game. And let's face it, there's velocity and spin like we've never seen it. So they do have to get back to their identity, and that means getting a couple people going at the same time, which has not been the case in the first seven. The season is a marathon. Everybody knows it. But you sometimes show yourself what you are, and it's hard to change that. Like, it's hard to mid-season change your approach. If you are a certain type of team, you have to live and die by it.
Braves legend John Smoltz joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. John, since Freddie and Dansby have left this team, there's been kind of questions around in Atlanta about who the leader on this team is. And I know as a guy that was a leader in those great teams in the 90s and the early to mid-2000s, you were that. How does it work? What's the dynamic in a baseball clubhouse? Because I know it's different from in football and in basketball. They're all sports, I think, are different. Is there a leader for each position group? Is there one leader like we always kind of think, well, that's the leader of the clubhouse? How does that dynamic work?
Well, you have to have a very secure guy to be a leader. You cannot be insecure, and you cannot just say with your words and not do with your actions. And typically, it needs to be a position player. It's hard to lead as a pitcher. We did it kind of collectively, but you really need a position player to be able to step up. And it's the little things. It's going to your teammates and when they're struggling and making them laugh and encouraging them and challenging them. And, you know, it puts yourself at a little bit of a risk. But it's such a long season, you've got to have each other's back. You cannot lose confidence in each other. You can lose confidence in yourself, and that's where a teammate comes up and says, no, man, you're the baddest dude on the planet. There's so much that goes into the mental part of the game, and that's why people who've never played the game don't understand. It's not that easy, and especially today. So, yeah, you've got to have somebody that stands in the gap and just and you pay us, but the team that has the least amount of fractions and the least amount of distractions usually does pretty well.
John, we've got Spencer Schwellenbach on the mound again, and I know last year when we talked to you going into the season, I think, or throughout the season, you could not say enough great things about him. What do you want to see from him tonight?
Well, the biggest thing is you can't win seven games in one start. You know, that's the hardest thing. Every pitcher that goes out wants to set the tone and be the guy that ends the streak or continues the streak in a positive way. And I think learning from the past, it's easier said than done. And a young pitcher is going to want to go out there in his home debut and do what he's done. And he is dynamic in himself. He's very intelligent in how he goes about his craft. And I think the biggest thing about, you know, look, you could find silver linings and everything, but I just look around the league and the game can be rough, man. The Cincinnati Reds have lost 3 straight 1-0 games. I can't think of a worse 3-game stretch when you know how well you're pitching and you just don't score a run. So the Braves and the flip side lost a heartbreaking game in their last road trip game because they did score the runs. They did get hits with runners in scoring position. So maybe that can be kind of the shot in the arm that they need offensively to click. You never know when it's going to click. And as a pitcher, you have to be ready when your offense gets going. I learned a long time ago, when your offense goes through a rough patch, don't try to pitch perfect. But on the same time, if you get a bunch of runs, you better hold those runs down. You better not give it up.
That's such a great
point. Fair enough.
I think Schwellenbach's got that attitude. He reminds me of you when you used to pitch in the postseason because you were so good and just so stoic. You see that from Schwellenbach. Excuse me. Hey, real quick, John, about the thing that's kind of taking storm with the league right now is the torpedo bats, and we've seen the Yankees use them. I think Stanton used one last year. What's your take on the torpedo bats? Because some people, anytime anything comes new, they want to say, well, we got to outlaw it because it's an advantage.
Yeah, this is not like the push-tush in football where they're discussing taking it out. You still got to be able to hit the ball in the sweet spot of the bat no matter where the barrel is. And as long as it's legal, I mean, you saw where the Yankees have put up a ton of runs and then a couple games they got shut down with good pitching. And good pitching doesn't matter what the torpedo bat is or isn't. You still got to be able to barrel up balls and be able to put a good swing on it. But it's definitely taken notice, and it's definitely allowed people to think about what in the world is going on with all of the all of the runs and homers. So it's as long as it's legal, it's fine.
John, I want to ask you a question about Jerickson Profar. And, you know, obviously he's got the 80-game suspension. We've actually, and you brought up the tush-push, we've actually talked a lot on this show about the relationship between Kirk Cousins and the Falcons locker room. I'm curious to get your take. Once Jerickson Profar is eligible to return after the 80-game suspension, what you think that relationship will be like in the locker room, in terms of guys just welcoming him back in and then him also not being eligible for, you know, a possible playoff run?
Yeah, I mean, those are always tough scenarios. Your teammates are going to be there for you. It's you can imagine the embarrassment in the news, and then the embarrassment in what you can't do at the end, especially if your team gets to the postseason. And you know, it's like a guy getting hurt and being out for the year. As much as you're going to miss him, you got to move on. You got to do your thing, and that's what teams have to do. Baseball is cruel in a lot of different ways because there's no time to kind of, oh man, we just missed our star pitcher. Oh, our best hitter just have to keep going. And, you know, unfortunately we've seen this linger in the sport more than it should. And I thought we'd reached a point where we'd never see it again. And unfortunately we are seeing it, you know, hopefully at a lot less rate, but that's the only thing you can do is support your teammate. He's going to have to be on an island by himself for a while. And then you're going to have to pick up the pieces, and people are going to have to contribute in a way maybe they weren't designed to contribute the way the organization had put the roster together. So everyone has to pick up the pieces.
Braves legend, Hall of Famer John Smoltz joining us here on 404 Day, presented to you by Verizon. John, I know you had Tommy John surgery at 34. I know there's a story out there. You talked to Tommy John. Spencer Strider had had it, but he then did the brace surgery, which is somewhat different and is somewhat a quicker recovery. But how careful does not only the Braves need to be, but Strider himself coming back from that injury, not to overdo it, rush back? I mean, what are the complications that can come from that?
Well, unfortunately, you know, mine was rare back then. And after 14 years and 2,000 innings or whatever it was probably an understandable surgery. Now we're having them like they're Band-Aids, and it's just such a bad epidemic. And the problem is when you start messing with two, and we've had people who've had three, and you're in a max effort world, yeah, you've got to be careful. I don't think anybody has been able to figure this thing out because they don't deal with the root cause. And the root cause is not a freak injury. It's an injury that the body is not sustainably able to do max effort and spin. So hopefully this surgery has put him in a good place, because mechanically and his body, he seems to know how his body works. But the reality is it's the second. And you're going to go through things, even though you've been successful the first time. You know, it's human nature to go, well, what do I trust? And how much do I push it? And I think the fact that pitchers have been dealing with this now at such an alarming rate, and the fact that baseball really hasn't done anything to deal with it, this is the norm now. And people are kind of okay with it. It's really weird to think that people are okay with guys having first and second Tommy Johns and waiting 16 months to see them get back on the mound. Now, it's the curse and the blessing. The blessing is we have a surgery that allows it to happen. The curse is it's happening way too many times.
John, thank you so much for the insight and for joining us this morning. We appreciate your time, and good luck this season.
I appreciate it, and the Braves are going to get going. Don't worry,
yes,
Braves
sir.
Fans.
The
they're going to get
calm
going.
Down.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
The voice of reason. That was Braves legend John Smoltz joining us, also the lead analyst for MLB on Fox and Hall of Famer.
Zach Brown, I think, is from the Noonan area.
Noonan?
Around that area. He just played two shows in Nashville.
You know, he just played.
He just played back-to-back Nashville this week.
You know, he played Dixie Tavern 3 weeks ago.
I'll be damned.
Where he got his start.
Cut his teeth there.
Showed up with a band. They played Dixie Tavern.
It. Yep.
When Buckhead was Buckhead. This guy knows when Buckhead was Buckhead. He wasn't afraid.
Ooh.
But Zach Brown playing the local bars, cover bands.
I think
bands.
He played Tuesday and Wednesday in Nashville.
Yeah.
Like, I think my whole freaking Facebook was there.
Right.
Like, everybody just took the damn week off and went to Nashville.
Well, it's 404 Day, and we're honoring some of the greats. How do you like being called one of the greats? That's what this
guy. I don't know about
that. Yeah, come on. Keith Brooking, covered him in college. You cover him in high, you wouldn't cover him in high school, did you?
I think I'm a couple years younger than Keith.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Ran into him in, I think, Buckhead Saloon one night.
Heck yeah, man. We're talking about the old school Buckhead. That was
dude, that was.
You know, I grew up in Senoia, Georgia, which that was the country back in the day. And, shoot, man, in 1994, I went on my official visit to Georgia Tech, and that was my first experience in Buckhead. So
they took you out.
That's what sold me.
Hell yeah, they took him out. Buckhead's the best thing. That was the best sale for Tech.
I'm telling you, I got buddies that weren't from Sonoya. They're from New York.
Yeah.
And they'd come to Atlanta, and they're just like, I'm not going home.
Yes.
Like,
I'm done.
It's like, this is everything.
Call her and tell her I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
I'm done.
It's changed. Buckhead's changed a lot since then, though.
So you're in Savannah. Is that right?
Well, my kids go to school in Savannah, Savannah Christian,
yep.
just across the Talmadge Bridge. But we live in Bluffton, South Carolina,
okay.
which is the town right before you go on to Hilton Head Island.
Yeah, great town.
So, we had a place here a couple of years after I got married. And, we'd spend a few months out of the year when I was playing ball. And we just, decided we kind of just on a whim, man, like we're going to try it out when I retire in 2012 and, built a house and good place to raise a family, we thought, and it ended up being that for sure. So it's been a great move, man. We love it here, no doubt.
Keith, I go down to see – I want two questions here. I go down about two mm-hmm. years ago to Savannah Christian. I go down, obviously, to see Elijah Griffin. And Coach goes, hey, I want to bring out this kid. And I said, another guy wants you to see. I said, okay, well, I'm here, bring him out. And he brings out this guy. He's about 6'3 and a half. He goes, he's a sophomore, too. And he goes,
Good looking kid.
He goes, this kid's name's Logan Brookin. And I said, wait a minute. What'd you say? He says, Logan Brookin. I said, Keith? And he goes, that's his dad. And kind of met him that day, very impressed with him, followed his recruitment the whole time. Obviously ended up at Clemson. Give me, before you ask that, I want to say this because people know this name, Elijah Griffin. What was it like being around him, and what do you think is like the, what do you think for him on the next level as one of the top defensive linemen maybe ever in the state of Georgia to come out?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Just one of the more talented kids, I mean, in the 2025 class for sure. And just his, he got his offer from Georgia in the eighth grade.
Correct.
I mean, just a freak of nature physically. He has all the tangibles, no doubt about it. And there's really not a weakness in his game. He explosive, changed direction. I mean, like, he's beyond his years. There's no doubt. I mean, I'll be shocked. I mean, and it's kind of a big need for Georgia, too, from what I've gathered, yep. The interior defensive line. So I'll be absolutely shocked if he doesn't play as a freshman. And not only that, man, just has all the talent and ability in the world. I mean, he's the top D lineman in his class, but just a great kid. Good grades, man, very coachable. I mean, I was with him daily and a leader of our team and just does things the right way. So I think go Kirby. You know Kirby, man. He'll get the best out of him. So, I mean, he's at a place to where Kirby's going to maximize his ability in every way. So I think it's a great fit and just a good kid, and we're pulling for him for sure.
Take me through the process with Logan, because he cut his own teeth, made his own name, had multiple 30-something offers. He ends up, I remember going to the 707 last year at Georgia Tech, and I'm watching him, and I'm going, damn, that's a good-looking kid that's going to play for Clemson. What was that process like for you guys and letting him make his own decision?
Yeah, he – it was crazy because he started playing football. I think 7 was his first year of flag. And then he started playing tackle at 10 when we moved here full time. And I kind of started a little rec league here. And then he got in middle school. And, I mean, he loved football from the beginning and was a good player. And, he got to high school and, like, he
kept growing.
He's close to 6'5 now. I mean, I'm looking up to him. 235 pounds, but he started outgrowing me like probably his sophomore year in high school. And he had a really good sophomore year, but I never I guess because I did it, like there was no pressure for him to play in college. Like I never pushed him that way. I mean, he loved the game and I gave him everything that he asked for, from that standpoint, as far as knowledge and things to do and working out. And the Joker, like, texts me. I'm doing some yard work at the house, and he texts me his sophomore year, like, halfway through the season. He goes, hey, Dad, I got an offer.
Wow.
I look at the text message. I'm like, I mean, he was having a good year, and I'm like, offer? What the heck are you talking about, offer? He goes, the tight end coach from South Carolina just came down here, and he offered me a scholarship. And it just absolutely blew my mind. I mean, he had all the tangibles. Like, his ceiling was really high, but I mean, those things come out early now. It's just a different time.
Yeah, definitely.
So, that's awesome. And once you get that first one, man, I mean, it just starts took rolling. Off.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Yes, it was a bit of a surprise. I mean, I kind of knew that he had the ability, like, you know, to play at the next level at that time, as long as he continued to work. But it was definitely early, and then, man, it just kind of took off, and it was a pretty cool experience. And he's worked his freaking butt off, so we're proud of him. He's an early entry. He's up there now, and he's working really hard. They got their spring game. I'm actually about to leave the house here in about 30 minutes, and they got their spring game tomorrow, so a bunch of my family's meeting me up there. So it's definitely some good times, man.
Five minutes left with Keith Brookie. We're going to play Buy or Sell with him in about 2 minutes. It's a 404 day. Interviews are presented by Verizon. I'd argue you overlapped one of the great eras, the greatest era. You had a quarterback, a Super Bowl appearance, I think your rookie year. You had mm-hmm. the Mike Vick era. And then were you here? How many years of Matt Ryan was Keith Brookin around for?
1 year.
The playoff.
2008. I got him his rookie year. So, yeah.
So you saw all shapes and sizes. But back then when you were an Atlanta Falcon, I mean, listen, nothing more special than Super Bowl followed by Mike Vick. Talk about what it meant to be in Atlanta during that era.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. I mean, you know, Atlanta, obviously growing up watching it, watching the Falcons, you know, it was, they were hard to watch. It was hard to be a fan. You know, I get there in my rookie year and we go to the Super Bowl. It's like, what in the world, man? Dream come true. So you get kind of pinch yourself, and then had a couple of bad years, and then Vic rolls in and just probably, I mean, arguably the face of the NFL.
No doubt.
Like, just such a dynamic player. And, like, he had unbelievable games, but, like, shoot, man, if you watch that freaking kid every day in practice, it was a treat, you know? It was like, so, yeah, it was just phenomenal. And then, you know, what happens to him, you know, after the success and the turmoil and just some of the, you know, adversity that he had to deal with. And man, to bounce back from that in Philly, I played against him when I was in Dallas. Like, so it was crazy, man. I would sum up my career in with the Falcons is, I mean, the dream come true. 11 yeah. years, for, you know, my hometown team, but it was a roller coaster ride for sure. There were some ups and downs.
Well, we got some questions in Buy or Sell that'll go back on some of the guys you played with. You ready to play Buy or Sell with Keith Brookin?
Heck yeah.
All right, here we go.
Let's do it.
Buy or Sell, you've had a beer with Jerry Jones post 11:30 p.m. You've had a drink with Jerry Jones post 11:30 p.m. Buy or Sell?
Buy.
What was he like to be around? Big personality.
He was awesome. Like, just, I mean, he's there every day, very involved, like, down to earth, like, would talk to everybody. And a loyal, an absolute loyal owner. Like, the dudes that go there and play well.
Yeah.
And, you know, the legends of Dallas, like, that Joker takes care of him, man. So, just a loyal guy.
Buy or sell, boys are easier to raise than girls. Buy or sell, boys easier to raise than girls. You got two of each, right?
I got two of each, yeah. Oh, my goodness. I'm selling. You got to wake up early for the girls, man.
Yeah.
Dan Reeves had a bad temper. Buy or sell?
Selling.
One of the great gentlemen I've ever been around in sports. Right?
Absolutely, yeah.
But he had his moments.
Bad temper. I mean, all coaches have a temper, you know. So that's kind of hard to.
Yeah, you're right. It's bad.
But the one thing I'll buy as far as Dan goes is he was a hard headed individual.
When Arthur Blank said, I don't know if you're coming back, he said, sayonara, buddy.
See ya.
That's not the way I'm going to be treated. Buy or sell, Tech got screwed in the 97 Georgia Tech game. Tech got screwed. Buy or sell.
Absolutely freaking buy. What in the world? Oh, I mean, honest to God, like, the game is won. We intercept the ball on the opposite side of the field, and they call freaking pass interference.
Was it who
and
had the pick?
Absolute buy.
Who'd they call the pick on? Who'd they call the interference?
Mars Tillman.
And who has,
I believe, right? Am I right on that?
Yep.
And who had the pick?
Tavares.
He had the pick. Who had the interference?
I think Tavares Tillman had the pick.
And they gave him the interference?
Yes. Two plays after that was the Corey Allen deal.
I remember you and Ron Rogers in the locker
room. I cried after two games, and that was one of them.
Ron Rogers and Keith Brookin in the locker room after that game. was as heartbroken as any two players I've ever seen.
I mean, Georgia boys, like Georgia boys growing up, Georgia didn't offer either one of us, you know. So, you know, we go to Tech and, like, we're going to freaking take it out on your ass. And then, you know, we go 0-4 against them. We go 0-4 against them. That was the one chance we freaking had.
Did you watch this year's game start to finish?
Oh, no. Heck no.
Did you watch the overtimes?
No.
All right. Buy or sell? No. Still love to work out. Buy or sell? I don't know what kind of shape you're in.
Oh, daily. Buying. Really? Yes, love to work out. Now, the workouts have changed. It's much more low impact. Swimming, biking.
Getting your steps.
Stairmaster. But, yeah, I'm getting it in daily. Most days, anyways.
Falcon cheerleaders were as good-looking as Cowboy cheerleaders. Buy or sell? Falcon cheerleaders were as good looking as
man. You got to put me on the spot.
Him pre-show.
He played in two cities.
It's a Friday, man.
All right, you can. All right, we won't go there. I don't know if, who's listening. You got hazed as a rookie. Buy or sell? Got hazed as a rookie.
Oh, that man. I'm old school.
Who was the worst?
I'm buying that one.
Who hazed you the worst?
Cornelius Bennett.
Biscuit.
Come on, Tuggle. Oh, by the way, did you guys know Tuggle turned 60 today?
Oh, okay.
I did not know. That's great. That's
awesome. To all the Atlanta fans. Yeah, so I'm gonna text some.
Jesse Tuggle and Keith Brooking, I think only guys have 22 tackles in a game, all-time Falcon record. Buy or sell, you'll be watching more than 8 hours of the Masters. Buy or sell, you'll be watching.
Oh, shoot. I mean, the over for sure. I'm buying that one, buddy. That's when golf season – well, it used to be when golf season started. Correct. Now the players is kind of earlier, but, yeah, man,
Your Masters app this weekend like everybody else.
If you saw Bobby Petrino, you'd shake his hand. Buy or sell. If you saw Bobby Petrino, you'd shake his hand. Buy or sell.
I don't even know if I should say this, man. I'm selling it. But my son was offered by Texas A&M. And
he was off the
Bobby
field,
Petrino dude. Was the offensive coordinator.
Wow.
And he wanted to go out on a visit, and I was like, no.
Wow.
Not going to do it.
I get it.
That's called karma. That's not how you treat somebody.
I think the Atlanta fans we understand like that.
I like that story.
Hell yes, they do.
All right, we got to wrap it up. Buy or sell this guy right here on a front. Luke Combs. Buy or sell Luke Combs.
Absolutely buy. What about you guys? You buy
I love Luke Combs. And that's from a Yam. I love country music now, too. But he's my number one right now. I love Luke Combs. I don't know. There's so many good ones. Stapleton, Jelly Roll. It's a good era for country music, right?
There's no doubt. Yep.
All right.
I'm 100% in.
Hey, listen, if you ever in Atlanta?
Yeah. Heck yeah, man. My mom and dad still live in Sonoya.
All right.
I get in town a lot, so.
If you can come do an hour in studio, we'd love to have you.
I would love to do that. And if you guys ever make it to the Lowcountry, you got my number, so look me up, man.
Keith, I think my guy Trevor Lawrence is moving close to there. I think he's building a place.
Yes, he is. I saw Trevor. Trevor lives. He got a piece of property in our community, and I saw him at a restaurant a few months ago, and he's in the process of building here, so. Yeah.
One of the all-time great Falcons. Hey, thanks for being on with us. Always great to catch up, Keith.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, Keith.
Good luck at the Clemson game, too. That's Keith Brooking. Great stories to tell. We'll come back. We'll play three strikes.
I told you not to buy
a He didn't want to answer
you
that.
Damn right he didn't want to answer. Put the mail on a Friday.
I know. I shouldn't have done it.
We got to talk about prom party. We'll get back.
We've been looking forward to catching up with Brad Guzan from Atlanta United for a while. He is our 404 day interview brought to you by Verizon. Brad, how are you?
What's happening, guys? I'm good. How are y'all?
Doing great. Looking forward to the game this weekend, of course. Had a great time watching the comeback last weekend. I want to know, did they give you your assist yet? Or, like, who do we need to call about this?
We got the paper ready.
That's what I'm saying. I've been trying to put it through to a couple different people at the club, and I've got no idea if it's been updated or not, but it certainly should be, you know.
We're gonna get to the bottom of this.
I mean, you passed it to him.
I tweeted it out. I said, "What an assist!"
Yeah,
and then That's what I'm saying.
Honestly, they that doesn't happen often. So when it does, you got to show the love.
I agree.
Brad, we got a chance to see you a few weeks ago while we were up there at training and everything, and talk to you, and because you know, every team is different. You know, even though the personnel might be the same, but every team is different. How is this team, and it's still early, different from any of those other teams?
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I think first and foremost, right, you look at our attack and you look at the players that we added in the summer, or I said the summer, in the offseason, and you know, we're trying to have them clicking on all cylinders, and I think we're still trying to find that chemistry, that balance. But with that being said, I think the last 30 minutes of the last game, I think kind of shows, like, what our potential is and what we can do when we are clicking, and our goal is to now be able to do that for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, just about the way the game ended. Like, you know, nobody, you're never going to give up, but to stick with that game and come back and get the 3 points, can you project that out? Like, is that a big picture representation to you of what the group is made of?
Well, I think it sends a couple different messages, right? I think the first message, the fact that, you know, we didn't chuck the towel in and we continued to fight and probe and get on the ball and be forward thinking with the ball, and ultimately get some goals back and then ultimately go on to win the game. I think that's a huge message. You know, we've not done that, I think, outside of one game, the history of the club. And so that's a huge positive. And then on top of that, just the belief within the group, right? To be resilient, to be hardworking, to be difficult to play against, because we gifted them goals, right? It's not that they cut us open. We made mistakes that gifted them goals. And listen, at this level, you get punished for that, of course. But, you know, it's not like we were played through and just kind of rolled over a little bit, if that makes sense.
Brad, it's 4-4 day, and obviously you're our special guest. And I wanted to get your thought process on how has it been since you've been here in Atlanta. I know your Illinois guy went to South Carolina, so you know about the South. But what, I mean, when you get the call to initially about this team here in Atlanta in 404, and you come here to be one of the original pieces to it, how is the, you know, the growth of this game, how has it been going here in this city since you've been here?
It's been amazing, man. It's been amazing. I don't think anybody predicted what has been Atlanta United since 17. And so to have the support, to have the success, and listen, there's obviously been some lows along that journey, but that comes with any professional sports team, and it's how you bounce back from those moments. And for us, it's been phenomenal in terms of being here in this city. You know, it's a place that my family and I call home now, and, you know, my kids love it. We love it. And so especially grateful just for all the support that is shown towards the club and towards the team.
Outside of Atlanta United, because I think that's probably the obvious answer, who are you and your kids the biggest fan of from a sports perspective, team-wise, player-wise, in the city?
They love going to all the different events, right? I mean, listen, during the football season, you know, my five-year-old boy, he played flag football for the first time, so he's asking about tackle football. Whoa. So during football season, it's all about the Falcons. All my kids play softball and baseball, so obviously the Braves have just started back up, and you know, for the first time I took my oldest, we went to a Hawks game a couple weeks ago, and so, you know, it's they're sports hungry, they love it all, and that's the beauty about Atlanta, right? It's you've got all the sports here that you can imagine, and you're able to get a taste of all of it throughout the different seasons.
All right, now you're one of the, like, because we talk about bringing championships to city. You obviously brought one here. We know the Braves have brought one here. They're in a rough patch right now, Brad. Yeah, they're in a rough time. Right
off
now.
To a tough start.
Off to a tough start.
They're off to a tough start.
Like if you can give them any advice, I mean, we didn't play it, but you're, like I said, you're in this thing, you're in this culture. What do you talk to our Braves about as they get ready for the home opener tonight?
I mean, listen, first of all, the home opener, right? You only get one of those, right?
Right.
Per season. And so it's a special night, and you could hopefully use tonight to kickstart the season, right? And say, right, we're gonna put the past week behind us, and we're gonna move on, and we're gonna use tonight to be the start of it, and we're gonna get going. With that being said, you know, you go back to your principles, you go back to what got you to this level, and you keep on fighting, man. It's, you know, no season is perfect. Even the greatest seasons in the history of sports they're not perfect. And so you've got to be able to deal with adversity, and I know those guys can certainly do it.
I think let's just clip that right there and send it over there. play that for in pregame. I think they're fired up. Hey, speaking of fans, let me ask you this, because you know, one of the great things about the Atlanta United supporters and just like soccer supporters in general is some of the creativity that comes along with cheers. Like, you've played in a lot of different places in front of a lot of different fan bases, and it has to be FCC friendly, obviously, because we're on the radio. But do you have a favorite Brad Guzan cheer that you've heard from supporters along the way somewhere?
I mean, I think I've gotta go with our supporters in terms of the chant that they've come up for myself, and in terms of he's big, he's bald, and then I'll let you guys finish it off.
He's a blue wall.
Yeah, exactly. When you hear your name being chanted, man, there's nothing like that. There's, you know, the support that we get, you know, not only as individuals but collectively as a team and as a group. You know, it drives you on. It represents more than just the shirt, right? It's not just a shirt that you're wearing. It's not just a badge. You're representing an entire fan base. You're representing an entire city. And, you know, for me, that part is extremely special.
All right, Brad. So me and Andy need a favor from you now, because we don't have a beer like Dukes and Bell. You love their beer. They got the spike. Do the golden spike. Me and Andy, I mean, we got some stuff. My man's going to the Masters this week, so if you need a towel.
Yeah, I'll get you a hat.
We got it. You got to put in a good word.
I love that.
Put a good word in for me and Andy to be able to nail this golden spike in. That's all we want to do.
Hey, I'm not saying I can promise it, but I know a few people and I'm having a few conversations. But the outlet looks good, so just make sure you're ready. All right, I know that sledgehammer is quite heavy, so we got to make sure we're ready to.
We've been doing, you know, people like hit the big tire with a hammer. Really? We've been doing that.
Yeah, perfect.
We've been doing CrossFit and all that kind of stuff. Hey, Brad, thanks so much for the time today. Thanks for having a little fun with us as well on 404 Day. Good luck this weekend.
Appreciate you, Goose.
I appreciate it, guys. Have a good one, all right?
Brad Guzan there, the keeper for Atlanta United. He's big, he's bald, he's a, you know the rest. Yeah. I love that that's the one that he picked as well, because it is really, really good. That was our 404 Day interview brought to you by Verizon.
We had to go into our bag, and we are so fortunate to get a chance to talk to one of our favorite guys, man, Jerry Glanville. 404 Day interview is brought to you by our folks at Verizon. And, Coach, it's good to have you on. Always good to talk with you. And, you know, you – Mike was saying this. You and Dion and just that team, it was a special time in Atlanta, wasn't it?
Well, it's really amazing, because we did not go to the Super Bowl. But the NFL Films has picked that team, that Atlanta team, with Dion and Andre Rison and Chris Miller, all those good players, as the most exciting team in the history of the NFL. And you had MC Hammer singing there. MC Hammer was really special. He wanted to talk to the team one day before the game in the locker room. And he says, okay, if I talk to the team, and you know me, I said, sure, go ahead. He gave a better talk than anybody I ever heard in my life. He was awesome.
That's great.
I gotta tell you this.
That's unbelievable.
I think what Evander's trying to say, man, is let's get out there and win. Jerry Glanville is with us, guys, on the WadeFord.com hotline. I was watching the NFL Films, Coach, of the season of 91. And some of those crazy games, the laterals in New Orleans, where all you got to do is fall on the football and they take it to the house. But that was your brand of football, right? Those guys are never going to back down.
Wide open. Nobody had more fun. I don't see people have the fun that group had. And that group, they worked hard. It's kind of funny. It's even when I was in Houston. Remember, I had Ray Childress. And he called me up after he's a full-grown retirement. He goes, we all just realized you worked just harder than anybody in the league, but we all enjoyed it and had fun, and that's the way Atlanta was. They worked harder than anybody. I got to say this for people who don't know, because they see Dion after the game with the television camera on. In pro football, Dion has to be the Atlanta Falcon corner, but then for half of practice, he has to be the corner for the team we're playing. Maybe it's Minnesota, maybe it's Green Bay, who knows. I'm going to shock y'all. When he was the show team corner with me, he never had a pass completed on.
Wow.
How about that?
That's crazy. So, I mean,
those Hall of Famers don't just walk in. They work it every day.
Yeah. Right. And Jerry, I'm glad you're saying this because, you know, there are guys – we had this discussion a few weeks ago where Asante Samuel came out and was like, I'm as good as this guy. And he was claiming to be as good. And I said, you know, when you start telling these stories like that and you've seen it firsthand and you know the impact they've had, he's a different guy. Jerry, how did you handle all these personalities, though? These are some big personalities.
Before we go any farther, today is Jesse Tuggle's birthday.
Hey.
And the man, the hammer. Let me tell you about Jesse. He was about my height. He could have got sued for his butt being too close to the ground. But from the waist up, he was built like a 300-pound guy. He could knock you around. And today, we take Jesse Tuggle. We open up with the Houston Oilers. He scores. We score three times on defense. You don't see that many places anymore, if at all.
Right. And he's also undrafted free agent. I mean, that's a guy that put the work in. You know, that's a guy that I got here, Jerry, in 98 for the Super Bowl season, but that guy was like a heart and soul guy. That's a guy that should be a Hall of Famer.
And what's amazing, I went up and coached. I coached everywhere, as you know. I was coaching the Hamilton Ticats in the CFL, and Larry Dean was the middle linebacker. He's the middle linebacker at Valdosta State that broke Jesse Tuggle's records. I got to coach him both.
Wow.
And so we were playing somebody, I think it was Toronto, and Jesse's son was on Toronto, and he comes down, and I bring them both together. And they both said, Coach, tell him I was better than he was. I goes, I ain't saying that. I loved you both.
It's Jerry Glanville, guys. It's 404 Day, brought to you by Verizon here at Murph's Cobb Galleria. It's Dukes and Bell as we're talking to one of the all-time greats. He's so much fun, and you had fun doing what you did, right? I mean, that's we don't see a lot of coaches. This is the thing, Jerry. I mean, like, we talk about Belichick, and listen, he's won a lot of games, but I don't know if he's had fun. Like, it just didn't feel like it did when we watched you and how you went about your business. What was your approach?
My approach was work as hard as you can. Don't leave anything on the table. Get yourself prepared, and then my biggest deal was effort counts twice, and if you're not going to be physical, you can't be here. You have to believe in physicality, and effort counts twice, and that was my thing with every team. And it's kind of funny, people would say that damn Glanville's got the fastest team in football again. We did not have we had the hardest working, most effort team in football. And that's not me. Jerry Glanville never made a tackle. I didn't get an interception, and I didn't score. It was the players that would say, let's go do it. Let's do it this way. And the players worked so hard and did such a great job, everybody thought I was a good coach.
Jerry Glanville's with us, guys, here on the WadeFord.com Hotline, celebrating 404 Day. I got to ask, as we ask you every time we have you on, is there any way you could have maybe let Brett Favre stay here in Atlanta, or he was such a wild man, there was just no getting him out of Buckhead?
Well, I'm still coached. I've been coaching 61 years, and he's the only guy I ever coached that didn't make the team pitcher.
Why?
I couldn't.
Exactly. Well, you know why. Why?
Oh, man.
Jerry, what do you think? Go ahead.
Everybody knew in practice he could play. Unfortunately, he missed the morning meetings and, he missed the install before he woke up. But I'm so proud of what he did after he got to Green Bay. I could have traded him to the Jets. We had an offer to the Jets. And if we'd have traded to the Jets, nobody would know who he was because New York, of course, like Atlanta, it doesn't close down. I told him, I'm trading you to Green Bay because after 9 o'clock, Chili Joe's is over. You can get chili with or without onions. That's it. And it changed his career.
Right on.
Hey, Jerry, that's a great story. What do you think about today's game? Look, I know rules change and we hear about all the safety, but there's something in me that as a kid, I want to still go back and watch the things that we did and how we played and the physicality. And I know it's still a physical sport. What do you think about all the rule changes, the replays, and all the stuff that's going on now with the NFL?
Well, I believe in a replay. In fact, a guy named Mike Dick and Jerry Glanville tried to get the replays when we were head coaches. They finally kicked us out of the league meetings. Because if you know it's a gross error, if you can fix an error, and if you watch the Final Four, what I love about the basketball coaches, they're not sure who touched that thing. Well, they'll go take a look at it. And if you got to fix those if they're wrong, there's too much at stake. And here's the deal, like NIL in college football. Everybody says, Jerry, you're in college football. You got to hate the NIL. Hey, you either accept what's going on or you go into that la-la land and retire. And right. You know, I'm not about to do that. And whatever's going on, and here's what, I got a big picture of a dinosaur above my desk. And below the dinosaur, it says, adapt or die. The dang dinosaur. The temperature dropped 4 degrees, and they all died.
It's true. Now, I don't know if there's some of our kids out there, if you learn that in school, but that's a lesson from Coach Glanville right there.
Well, the only Jerry reason Glanville. I know, my first job, I rode to work on a dinosaur.
By the way, D.C. at Northwestern Oklahoma State, as we speak. Jerry Glanville with us here on Dukes and Bell. You had Deion Sanders, and he's got a kid named Travis Hunter. Now, you let Deion have a couple of catches as a receiver. Later on with the Cowboys, had a few more. How would you handle a kid like Travis Hunter, Jerry, who can play both ways and be really good at both corner and wide receiver?
I would take him X amount of practices on one side, and like Deion didn't start playing offense, so he knew everything that was going on defense, and I whatever side you want him to feature, I would feature that and then dribble in what he could learn on the way. Deion is a wide receiver. We had like 12 wins. The Dallas Cowboys had 12 wins. And we're playing the last game of the season. And Deion was like running a nine route. They pushed him out of the sideline, and they threw the baseball hat. He was out of bounds. In 81, Michael Haynes caught the pass, and they brought it back. He was out of bounds. You think I didn't go crazy? They got 21 and 81 mixed up, and we lost the touchdown pass against the Cowboys.
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, honestly, that's tough. You have embraced.
So you say, what about replay? Yo, give me replay, please.
Yeah, give it to you. You have embraced being one of the greatest characters, though, in the NFL. I mean, in the history of the league, right. You know, you've embraced that. It didn't matter where you were. This was your persona. Did it ever stop you from getting a job you wanted, though? Did somebody ever say, hey, Jerry, you know, you're a little bit too much, too over the top. Did it ever stop you from getting a gig?
Well, I applied for a job this year, and they came back, and they said I needed more experience. I guess I got to keep digging.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure there's some people that didn't like me, but, you know, I was in pro football my whole adult life, college football, and I'll shock you. I've never applied for a job, so I can't tell you if I applied, if that would have kept me from getting it. I was fortunate enough that if I was out of work, I had somebody in 4 days. Here's what I'll tell you. My claim to my own personal fame, this is me. I never worked anywhere and left that they didn't try to bring me back. Every job. So somebody where I was working thought we were doing a good job. When I left Atlanta the first time and went to Buffalo, Taylor Smith told me his dad, Rankin, you know, of course, you know where Atlanta went when they started playing. He goes, Taylor, now where did that guy go that we fired with Lehman Bennett? Go find him. And whoever thought Rankin Smith would hire a head coach that coached at Georgia Tech. Because when I was with the Falcons, Rankin Smith not only owned the Falcons, he owned the Georgia Bulldogs. And lo and behold, they say he'll never hire Glanville. Glanville's a Georgia Tech guy, and he beat the Bulldogs. Well, he just wanted to win, and he loved the way we did it.
Jerry Glanville's with us, guys. It's 404 Day, so we're celebrating the legacy of Atlanta sports. We get to talk to Warren Moon about once or twice a football season. You had some unbelievable teams before you came to Atlanta with those Houston Oilers and some of those great playoff games. But is Warren Moon one of the all-timers you coached?
Well, here's the thing with Warren Moon. Yeah, holding with the offensive line. 15-yard penalty. Everybody says, well, what are you going to call it? Third and 21, third and 22. We had a play called Indiana. I didn't care if we had old. Warren Moon could throw the ball through the car wash and not get the ball wet on a 22-yard dig. And that isn't coaching. That's a whip. Well, you know how most quarterbacks lead the receiver. The receiver's way over here to the right, and he throws it to the left, and they'll all come together at the same time. Warren Moon didn't do any of that. He just stuck it on you, and here it comes. And I had receivers in camp that said, I got to wear gloves. He's taking the skin off my fingers. That's awesome.
Warren is one of the best guys that I've ever been around, and I agree with you 200%. And, you know, he finally got his recognition, obviously, and, you know, you add those years in the CFL. We know if he had been in the NFL. Yeah, he was unbelievable.
I went up to the CFL, and the game would be over. Everybody would be lining up for me to sign an autograph before we got on the bus to go home. Everybody says, God, they really love you here, don't they? Goes, no, they know I coach Warren Moon. That's the only reason they want my autograph.
Hey, before we cut you loose, Coach, we've talked to a bunch of guys from that team back in 91. Do you still have the California trophy? The year the Falcons beat everybody from California, L.A. Rams, Chargers, 49ers, did you still have that thing around?
Can you imagine there's never been another team to do that? There's never been a team that swept the West Coast that wasn't. And if you go back with that trophy, why was that so important? Are you ready? The Falcons never won at the L.A. Rams, not one time. The Falcons never won on the road against the San Diego Chargers. We had a lot of never-never, so I was so proud of what they did. And you'd have to go back and look at the history to see how amazing it was. And it was kind of funny. Bobby Bethard, you love this. Bobby Bethard he was the general manager of the Chargers. And you got to love what I tell you this. And we played him when I was with the Oilers, and now we go to Atlanta. We're like a 20-point underdog. And Dan Henning's the head coach there, and we kick butt. And Bethard comes in the locker room. He goes, you know what I just realized, Jerry? I goes, I have no idea, Bobby. He goes, you come here and you beat us with Houston. Yeah, nothing changes except the color of the jerseys and the helmets.
Yeah.
What was he talking about? He's talking about effort, physicality, want to. Our Atlanta Falcons had want to. And what is want to? I got to be the guy to get so. I'm not waiting for somebody else to make the end of. And they were so good, you love this. We're going to play the Saints, and they're going to try to tackle our running back. That Falcon team never tried to make a tackle one game. They were trying to kill a guy with the ball. God, I love that.
That's the way it was, and that's why we loved it. Jerry Glanville, it's always good to talk with you. We love hearing from you. We're glad you're doing well. Hey, take care, and thanks for stopping by today, Jerry.
Well, I'm down to two friends, so don't either one of you get sick.
Well, Bo Box still asks for you, so I'll say hi to Bo for you too, Jerry.
All right.
Take care. Right now, we need to talk to Brian McFadden. B-Mac, two-time Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers. He is an NFL analyst and the co-host of All Things Covered, the podcast. And B-Mac, Mike and I were just talking before you came on. Ironically, I think we talked a little bit about this last week, but today was Colorado's pro day. I think Dion called it the showcase. And, you know, I said, if you weren't sold or are sold on Shedeur Sanders, I don't know if you went to this, if you're a scout or an evaluator or whatever in the NFL, it changed your mind. I think, you know, this only enhanced what maybe you thought about a particular player, and that's how I think about these pro days. What do you think as far as Shedeur? Could he have helped himself even more today?
Yeah, I think he did a great job. I think watching his collegiate career the last 2 years at Colorado, you know, I said this week in and week out with Shedeur, you know, he's been comfortable being uncomfortable. And I like that for young quarterbacks because 9 times out of 10 guys, when they get drafted extremely high, they're going into uncomfortable situations because the team is probably a bad team. The structure is not in place. And he's been used to being in those type of scenarios with how bad his offensive line has been in the last 2 years, but yet and still, he delivered week in and week out against the who's of who. No solid running game. It didn't matter. And what he did at his pro day, just, you know, the guy can throw the football. He's a natural. But one thing I think people overlook, and they're not talking about enough, is the above-the-shoulder game with Shedeur Sanders. How smart he is, the cerebral nature that he provides, the instincts, and he just, his knowledge of knowing ball. You know, those are things that are very, very important for young quarterbacks because they're going to be exposed to defensive concepts they've never seen before. But when you have the knowledge to be able to make the timely adjustments, you will be successful. And we saw that with, you know, Jaden Daniels, with all the ball he played in college football, his above-the-shoulder game was where it needed to be, which led to him having an outstanding rookie campaign for the Commanders.
It is a BMAC with us here, guys, on the WadeFord.com hotline. We were just kind of joking around last segment, B. I said, I'd move up everything. I'd give up first, second, next year's first, go get Travis Hunter, and there you set. Now you got a guy who can do everything for you. I mean, do other teams view this guy as literally, he might not be the best need, but the best athlete in this draft?
Yeah, when you draft Travis Hunter, Mike Carr, you're drafting two players in one. Regardless of how you look at his defined position, you're drafting a guy that can help on either side of the football field. And that's the most intriguing thing that I'm really anticipating with Travis. What position will be attached to his name when it's called in the first five picks, right? Will it be cornerback? Will it be wide receiver? Because clearly he will play either or, but what will his dominant position be? But I think he is such a gifted, talented player. I think wide receiver should be that position because when he has the football in his hands, he's special, man. He's gifted. And the thing about wide receivers, as you guys know, when you watch Atlanta play, Drake London, Darnell Mooney, do they play every offensive snap? No. No. Wide receivers don't. So there lies the opportunity for Travis Hunter to be heavily involved because it's not like he's playing 100% of the snaps because NFL wide receivers don't do that. Defensive backs, they do that. A.J. Terrell is not coming off the football field. You guys know that. But when you watch Atlanta play, you see Drake London in the lineup, and sometimes you see him on the sideline when the offense is on the football field. So there's a common ground for Travis to be able to do some of the same things we saw in Colorado. It's up to the organization to use him the right way, whatever the organization drafts him.
Yeah, and B, that's the thing. We talk about going to the right place. Mike, you know, spoke about this yesterday because I was talking about, you know, how guys don't pan out, and it does depend a lot on where you go and how they believe in using you. I want to ask you about the Raiders and what they're doing in giving Geno Smith all this money. Listen, it's not hundreds of millions of dollars, but I am just surprised that they even gave him a 2-year, $60 or $75 million extension with $66 million guaranteed. And Mike and I were talking yesterday. Are we not seeing Geno? Is he better than we think he is?
All right, so let me explain it to you like this, Carl, right? Pete Carroll, who is the new head coach in Las Vegas, he signed a 2-year deal with a 1-year option, so basically it's a 3-year deal. Pete Carroll is 74 years old, so clearly he's at closer to the end of his coaching career than the beginning. If you're Pete Carroll, do you have time to wait around like an Uber passenger, or do you need to get this thing rolling right now? You need to get it rolling right now, right? So there lies the chance to trade for Geno Smith. So when you bring in Geno Smith, you're now bringing in a guy who's ready-made right now. You know, sometimes when you draft young quarterbacks, you got to hope they can develop in time to be able to get into the lineup. Look at New England and Drake May. Drake May didn't play the first half of the season, but they were able to do that because this is a rebuild. For Pete Carroll, you're not trying to be a part of a rebuild. You're trying to jumpstart this automobile as fast as possible to get in the interstate. So then when you trade Geno, you go ahead and give him the opportunity to be your quarterback for more than 1 year. So for Pete Carroll's side of things and where he is in this organization, it makes sense. Because if he was a younger coach, you have time. You have time to go through the process, draft a young kid, maybe in year two, year three, he's ready to go. But if you're 74 and you sign a two-year with a one-year option, you need to get a guy in who you're familiar with and you know he is ready to get the keys and get off and start rolling. So I think it makes sense. When you trade and you gave the resources that you gave away to Seattle, clearly you didn't do that just to have Geno Smith in the saddle for 1 year. That wouldn't have made any sense financially and with the resources. But giving him this two-year deal, it wasn't like he's breaking the bank anyway. He's not in the Dak Prescott range or the Joe Burrow range. He's getting pretty good money, but it's not putting you in a cap hell type of situation where you can't address other areas of your team.
And again, we said yesterday, if they get somebody like Genty from Boise State and along with Brock Bowers, man, that'll be some fun old football to watch offensively. Our man Brian McFadden joins us here, guys. Check out the podcast, All Things Covered, one of the best in football. All right, man, we've been talking the last few days and freaking out, Falcons fans, the possibility we upgrade a tackle. The heir apparent for Jake, but more importantly, a pressing need, protect Michael Penix Jr.'s blind side and upgrade from McGarry. Any chance we go tackle, man? They've been talking and looking at some the last few weeks.
I hope not. No. Yeah, you know what? You can address the tackle position at some point during the draft, right during the weekend of the draft. Yeah, you can, but you shouldn't have voted a first-rounder on a tackle. No. You guys have been complaining about the inability to do what over the last, feel like, decade. Put pressure on opposing quarterbacks, right? It doesn't matter who's coaching the defense. It's something about the Falcons defensively where they don't give you consistent pressure. And if you don't do that, you're going to struggle to win ball games. So stop trying to overlook the issue. The issue has been defense putting pressure on opposing quarterbacks. One of the best – you got to go back to John Abraham days when you talk about being consistent, putting pressure on quarterbacks year in and year out. I remember Vic Beasley, you know, dropped 16 sacks 1 year, but that was an outlier of a year for him. Outside of that, you haven't had those consistent guys that can come off the edge and raise hell doing so against whoever it is they're playing against in terms of the opposition in the quarterback. So go get a defensive lineman that look like what they hunt.
Yeah. I mean, and there are plenty of these guys. And being over the next couple – plenty of these guys. But over the next few weeks, we want to talk to you about some of these guys that we've been talking about. Mike and I are going to amp up and start to focus in a little bit more as we get closer to the draft. But I do feel like the draft has this particular one has the potential to be a little crazy simply because I don't know if anybody's sold on any one particular player. We keep talking about Cam Ward. Outside of that, what do we know about these teams and how they feel about these players?
That's the thing. That's why the draft is such an entertaining event to watch because we don't know. We don't know what some of these teams think about. Hey, even going back to last year, no one thought Atlanta was going to do what they did. And drafting Michael Penix with their first-round selection after giving Kirk Cousins the money they gave him. But we have to wait and see. That's why mock drafts are entertaining because everybody gives their opinion, but clearly we don't know. And with Cam Ward, it feels like Tennessee should draft Cam Ward because they need a quarterback. But who knows what Tennessee might do. They might trade out of the top spot. Maybe another team that we're not really talking about could trade up to go get a Cam Ward. What about Cleveland? What is Cleveland going to do? Right? They got to find a way to get a quarterback. The owner just came out and said they swung and they missed. Unfortunately, yep. They wasn't using the torpedo bats that the Yankees are using because they're still trying to hit a ball to go get a quarterback. So I can't wait to see how it unfolds. But every year, these are the things that we ponder and we think about because clearly we don't know the answers to.
Hey, man, why don't you go like Cam Haywood and call out, Aaron Rodgers to go pick a team already and sign with the Steelers?
Aaron Rodgers is on Aaron Rodgers' time. But the one thing that Aaron Rodgers has on his side, the Steelers want him more than he wants them. So he will have a destination whenever he's ready to make that announcement because clearly the Steelers have put all their eggs in that basket of trying to get him to be their quarterback.
All right, man. Always good to talk with you. B, have a great weekend. We will talk to you next week, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank you.